session number 26546, mill 13.
Major Highfield, Reel 13. We're talking about when you were going from the village of Halderon and trying to find an OP to the right, crossing the Bund and towards a tile factory. And you just got to the tile factory.
I had examined the buildings, and none of them, unfortunately, were high enough to give any visibility over the landward side of the Bund. Other than climbing up the chimney. So I climbed up the Bund cautiously and got to the top and looked around and almost immediately saw German helmets in slit trenches to a slight bend to the right of the Bund, about 50 yards away. I stayed in this position for some time and there was some enemy shelling, and then a shell landed very close to the top of the Bund and me, and I scarpered quickly down to ground level again. A single trench is an impossible target for the artillery. Then I realized my binoculars had come off and were on the top of the Bund, so I crawled up very carefully again to retrieve them and came down again and decided we would then make a retreat the way we'd come back, because there was no useful observation I could use for targets. By the time we got back, using the same route as we did coming out, it was near 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and that was enough for the day. The night was again intermittent shelling throughout, and in the morning.
Now, hang on. One thing that you've got in your notes is that there was some incendiary fire. Yes. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, my driver told me that they'd been firing incendiary bullets with the machine gun fire, and that it set fire to many of the buildings, including the one behind which we had our carrier. We moved the carrier slightly away. There was a coal store on the side of the building full of little egg-type pellets of fuel, and the whole of this was burning. He said, "Do you want some tea, sir? It'll only take 5 seconds." Put our brew can on the thing, and sure enough, it was boiling straight away. On the morning of the third day, I stayed put in our position with access to the nearest company commander if he could call for any if he needed to call for any targets. The day passed with continuous shelling, and then I was told I was to be relieved that night, after dark, of course, and we then moved back to safety. I heard afterwards that the battalion, which was one of the HLI battalions, it was the first time they had been in action, which is a horrible job to be given a night attack. And I thought they did very well. They suffered, I understood, about 150 casualties over the period of these days, and that would be about 25% of the forward strength. I then thought about it for a minute and realized that we had lost one man, and that was also 25% of our strength.
Now, what happened next then? Because you were pulled back to your unit.
Up to this time, the sector on the Arnhem sector had been the hottest on the whole front, and very soon it began to go down until in the end it was the quietest sector. Lines were established, and large areas of the ground between the rivers Waal and Niederrhein were, or Lech, were held by us.
You were back at Bemmel, were you?
We had various OPs that we occupied. There was one battalion of the DLI held ground north of Elst, and I remember doing a couple of turns for two or three nights and days with them up there. And then there was an OP near Bemmel, which we called the jam factory. And it was interesting, they were making jam for the German army, but they put very little in it, and they had also got special little flaky pieces of wood which they put in to resemble fruit pips, but were in fact not fruit at all. Anyway, finally the time came on about the 29th of November, I think was the date, that the 50th Division was relieved, and we passed under command of 49th Div.
Now, when you say relieved, they were disbanded.
The decision had been made to send the infantry brigades and divisional headquarters home in cadre strength, and they would be sited in the UK and help to train reinforcements for the spring offensives that looked as if we would have to wait for.
Now, why do you think they've done that? Because it's quite controversial, even now, in some elements of the Durhams.
I think they were completely run down. The leadership, so many casualties over such a long time. I remember talking on several occasions to company commanders of the DLI, and the good people went, and every major attack you made was about 25% casualties, and therefore this was quite a good decision.
Were you aware of any resentment in the 50th Div or 151 Brigade at their constantly being used as an assault division? Because we talked about this off tape, but not on tape.
No. Well, that was... we thought that Montgomery had a policy of choosing a good, sound division and using it to do a reliable job, but usually one in the front, knocking in the front door. Merath is a very good example of 50 Div. 151 Brigade had done supercharge at Alamein. They did the frontal attack at Merath, and then they had the fight at Primosole Bridge in Sicily. And the casualties were extensive.
You told me off tape as well that there was some unrest about, you know, that they booed Montgomery once. Can you tell us about that on, you know?
This was just what I was told, and... I didn't see.
Okay, all right. That's perhaps we shouldn't. Yeah. So, how did you feel? How did you react? I mean, you've been working with 151 Brigade for so long.
Well, it wasn't too bad. It was a sad moment, but 50th Division was given a 4th Brigade under command for the landing in Normandy, and this brigade, complete with our regiment, moved into 49 Div. So we were, in fact, amongst friends. And
which brigade was it? Do you remember the number of the...
56 Brigade. And, in fact, the divisional sign of 49 Div was a polar bear, and we all embroidered small TTs on our signs to show that we still were connected to the Northumbrian Division.
And how did things up? When you were in the 49th Division, were you working with 56th Brigade?
We worked with 56th Brigade.
And now, did you were the 49th Division also in on the island? Where were they?
They were in the 1st Canadian Army. and were holding this particular sector that covered Nijmegen and the island.
So what happened next then?
Well, the winter went on. It became very quiet at times. But perhaps I should mention at this stage, after the Arnhem Dew had simmered down, we had a lot of observation to do of V1 and V2 rockets being started off on our front. The V1s were directed at Antwerp, and many of them failed in their first 5 or 10 minutes of flight and came down on our, mostly on our forward lines, which was no joke, as I think it's 2,000 pounds of explosive in the V1. The V2s were also directed at Antwerp. A gun line was established, I believe, to protect Antwerp later, and we sent back bearings all the time on this activity, which was then taken on usually by the Royal Air Force.
Now, what else was going on? What were conditions of life like on the... You were on the island still during that winter.
Very quiet and very pleasant. We had a battery mess.
Tell me about that. What was it like?
We just occupied a Dutch house because all the population had been evacuated, and used that. Various OPs positions over quite a wide extent. We were right up to the Lek River on the left-hand side of the bridgehead, and we met 101st Division and others, and it became a routine. One or two plans were suggested to attack Arnhem. One included putting a huge smoke screen down south of the bridge, and we viewed all this with grave trepidation. It seemed pretty lunatic, and in fact it was never attempted.
So you were basically just holding the line?
That's it. The Reichswald batters had started and were very severe, and all the effort was going into that. Right at the end, in fact in 45, we were sent down to the Reichswald to take over from the 53rd Welsh Division.
When would that be?
This would be in March, I think. And there were just two weak companies either side of the road, which was all that was left of one of the battalions of the Royal Welsh Fusiliers. The casualties in the Reichswald fighting were most severe. Going back to the island again, there were one or two escapades, raids on certain places.
What do you remember of those?
There was one at Zetten, Z-E-T-T-E-N, I think in January. I think it was late January. But I didn't take part in that one. But on another raid, I was to proceed as an FOO, and the object was to obtain a prisoner for identification of the troops opposite us.
And where was this on? Was this raid? Was this on Zetten as well, or was this on?
No, it was on a small village up near the river Lek.
What do you remember of the raid?
It was a disaster. It was a very bad plan. If you can imagine a triangle, very nearly isosceles, the starting point and the peak of the triangle facing due south, there was a German position of unknown strength halfway along the top base. A company attack was planned. The company commander sent one platoon up one side of the triangle and one platoon up the other. They then were to converge along the baseline, in which case they would be facing each other. And he, in the meantime, decided to go across country with his headquarters, and I had to go with him. He had, I think, three men with him, two of whom were a Piat Mortar team. At this time, with my concern about communications, I had devised a scheme whereby I put the large set from the carrier in a pram, and had one signaller wheeling the pram and another man to help just move it when you came to a ditch or piece of ground. And I used it on this occasion. I went in trepidation with the company commander. It was a very bright moonlight night. We rounded a corner of a Dutch building about 100 yards from the objective. And suddenly there was a shower of stick grenades from the Germans thrown at us. But fortunately, they all dropped about 10 yards short. The next thing was a Panzerfaust hit the corner of the building, and there we were. The commander of the formation, and I thought how stupid the whole thing was. The platoons closed in rapidly. The Germans evacuated into the church, which was the safest place. There were perhaps about 20 or 30 of them. And they lost a very good officer killed trying to get into the church because they couldn't batter down the doors.
The infantry did.
Mm. Then another thing, they fired two green very lights to withdraw, which told the Germans straight away what was happening, and we had constant artillery fire on the retreat. I was glad to get back to my carrier and home.
Did the pram idea work well then, do you think?
They didn't get the prisoner.
Did the pram work though?
The pram worked okay, yes.
No.
Yes.
So it was a good idea.
Well, I could do 2 or 3 miles, obviously, with this. Anyway, it was an interesting experiment. I think I'll go back now to after the time came when I was called into regimental headquarters and told I was going to be attached to HKRA of 49th Div. So I said goodbye to my troop, and for the last 2 months, I was 6 weeks to 2 months, I was on 49th Div HQ. Eventually,
what were your actual duties? You were acting as a staff officer, artillery staff officer. What were you actually doing? What was your job?
Well, I was part of the team with the fire control at divisional headquarters, which was the main thing. But I was sent out on one or two missions.
Now, what was your job on fire control first? Tell me exactly what you had to do.
Well, if a divisional target was requested, you had to. A decision would be made whether to accede to it or not, and you then gave the necessary orders to the regiments concerned to arrange the fire on a time basis. Eventually, the Canadian 5th...
And the other thing is, you said you were sent on a couple of special missions. What were they?
Well, I'll just tell you. The 5th Canadian Infantry Division came up and in a silent attack captured Arnhem and went straight through to the Zuider Zee. One of the key things then was to move people forward, and I was sent out on a motorbike to a specific crossroads south of Arnhem but on the far side of the river to control the traffic for 3 or 4 hours to make sure that the guns got through and the other columns have got through and that there was a fair distribution of progress forward. The front line then moved through Arnhem to a bit further to the left and stopped on a line which I think was called the Graeber Line. At about this time, we were in the last week of the war, hostilities were not attempted while negotiations went on with the Dutch, and finally
the Germans
the negotiations went on. Prince Bernhard was somehow involved in this, and there were top communications going on about getting food into the areas of the Dutch, large Dutch towns. Finally, May the 5th came, and the end of the war, and we set, I think the message came through about midday. People celebrated left, right and centre.
In what way? How did you celebrate?
I can see that I thought it was better if one officer stayed on his feet in case there was a job to do. And I was very careful when I saw various mixed liqueurs of unknown vintage being poured into one bowl. And sure enough, the Dutch resistance were celebrated after dark by firing into the air. And I had to, on divisional instructions, orders, I had to go out with a patrol and proceed through the area, generally telling people to stop firing and have a bit of common sense. After that, the infantry were completely rested and the artillery were put in charge of securing the prisoners of war. Opposite us was a strange unit which was called the Dutch SS Division. These, of course, were all traitors, and we hoped very much there wouldn't be action by the Dutch underground against them. By the CRA and I went to meet the staff of this Dutch division, and he told them that I was to be his liaison officer in their headquarters until the disarming took place. They had to retain their arms for their own self-defense. I think we were there about 4 days. I insisted on having a line laid from their exchange to a nearby Dutch house so that we were not in their headquarters. And I would transmit any orders given to me direct to their chief of staff.
You found this an unpleasant duty being attached to the Dutch SS division? And
it was very eerie to see these officers who had mostly been badly wounded on the Eastern Front and were then sent to this division in their Nazi uniforms with the slashes on their sleeve of the SS divisions, Das Reich, Adolf Hitler, etc. So seldom did one ever see the enemy during the war, and to have these, to see them face to face, it was rather eerie.
Were most of them Dutch, or were there it sounds like there's a fair sprinkling of Germans in amongst them.
The rank and file were Dutch, but what I was seeing, all the officers on headquarters were German SS officers. Anyway,
was there any trouble? Did the Dutch resistance attempt to attack the division, the SS division?
It passed off all right. There was one rather strange little episode. The commander of the division would only surrender his particular weapon, which was a small pistol, to our CRA privately in his caravan headquarters. All the rest were disarmed by parades. So really, that was the end of the fighting. But we moved down to the Ruhr to take over from American division there for a short time. Then we moved back to the Osnabrück area. And about this time, I saw an ACI, Army Council instruction, calling for names to be forwarded for a course for air liaison officers. I decided that I would, for the first time, volunteer.
Now, why did you decide to do that after not volunteering has served you so well?
Well, it was a very mixed position in Germany, and I didn't really care for it very much.
Why not?
Well, in the Ruhr, I can remember the first train coming in with potatoes only on it, and we had to fire over the heads of the Germans, because otherwise they would have stormed the train. They were so starving down there in the big cities. Anyway, I made this decision, and very shortly after that, I was in UK carrying out this course, which was very gentle, various places. I went to Old Sarum for a week on the course, and I opted to choose a liaison officer with the Navy rather than the RAF.
Now, what was the course? What were you learning on the course? What was it about air liaison as an artillery officer that you were learning?
It was to provide the link between land forces and the Navy, when the Navy were supporting land forces with their aircraft, or the RAF were doing the same. About the beginning of August, I was told I would be flown out to to Ceylon.
Hang on, and why had you picked the Navy rather than the Air Force?
I think it appealed to me more, and secondly, I had heard, or I gathered on the course, that the Navy didn't have any intelligence officers with the squadron, and you also had to undertake intelligence officers' duties.
So where were you posted to after the course? Was in June, would it be?
It lasted over perhaps 6 or 8 weeks.
So June to July sort of thing.
But at the end of August, beginning of August, I went to... I was put in process to take a flight out to Ceylon. This flight was from the Gloucestershire airfield in a York transport aircraft, and I flew out to in 36 hours reaching Karachi. Stops at Malta, Cairo West, Shaiba, and then finally Karachi, Maripur Airport.
Was that your first flight?
It was not my first flight, no. I had been up in Anson before.
So what happened when you got there?
It took another plane to fly right across India from Karachi to Ceylon, where it landed at Ratmalana Airport, where I was met by an officer from the carrier who had driven across the island in the jeep to fetch me. And we drove back the next day, and I was taken on board an escort carrier, HMS Khedive, Khedive, at Trincomalee.
Now, what was it like aboard HMS Khedive then? What were your first impressions?
They were well trained by this time. Many of the pilots had been army officers who had switched to meet this requirement. There was one squadron on board which had 24 aircraft. There were 30 pilots. The squadron leader did all the instructions for air activity and air-to-air arrangements. But the AL section had to provide all the maps and all the intelligence, and also escape aids and things for the pilot, and consisted of a major and a captain. I was taking over the captain's vacancy, two marine clerks and a jeep, which was very favourably looked upon when we were in port, as it was the only transport that could be offloaded. We went to sea on an exercise fairly soon afterwards, and the naval formation was called AC-21.
Standing for?
Aircraft. I don't understand the naval. There was a battleship squadron which was called BS-3, consisting of two battleships, Richelieu, and I think it was Rodney. I think it was either Rodney or Nelson. I think it was Rodney. Anyway, AC-21 commanded something like 8 or 9 of these escort carriers. So it was quite a